Welcome to the Habit Mechanic Podcast. To help you finish this year strongly and get ready for a successful 2024, we're re-releasing every podcast we've recorded so far that takes a deep dive into the Habit Mechanic book. The episode's coming up in a few moments. Remember, if you want to get your business off to a great start in January, get in touch to discuss how our Habit Mechanic keynotes or workshops can equip your people with practical skills that help them build super habits in 5 minutes. Or if you want to earn £100,000 per year working part-time by launching your own coaching business, we guarantee to help you do that in just 13 hours. Get in touch with us today to learn more about becoming a certified Habit Mechanic coach who can transform people's lives and is recognized as a world leader in the field. For more details, contact us via the website. The link is in the podcast notes. Or if you want to feel better and do better every day, download the Habit Mechanic University app from your app store. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, Habit Mechanics. Dr. John Finn here. Welcome to another episode of the Habit Mechanic podcast. Today we're going to cover some really central and important ideas in what it takes to be at your best. And this is the currency of how we actually build better habits, how we become happier and healthier, but also how we become more stressed and worried more and beat ourselves up. But today's a really important episode. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Andrew Whitelam. Andrew, how are you doing?
Yes, hi there, John. Great to be speaking to you again. And as you say, these chapters in the book that we're referring to are really important and pivotal moments, I think. That was my reaction when I read them. And I'm looking forward to speaking to you about them. I think before we move on, it's perhaps just worth recapping so far the podcasts we've produced in recent weeks, which cover the book and take the deep dive into the book. Five chapters in total have been covered. Chapter one focuses on the T plan. Chapter two focuses on the introduction to the method you use and why traditional methods are not fit for purpose any longer, and the Habit Mechanic approach must be embraced. Chapter three talks about the language, the specific language that you use when you work with people to become habit mechanics and work with them on me power conditioning. And then chapter four is the detailed look at this idea of black box theory and why it's not appropriate when it comes to understanding yourself and developing yourself. And we talk about the great sporting moment in British sporting history, the 4 minute mile by Sir Roger Bannister. And then finally, chapter five talks about learning, which we will come on to today, but in a different way. I wonder, John, if you have a moment just to give us a couple of thoughts, just to recap each of those chapters, starting with chapter one, the T plan.
Yeah, in chapter one, we felt it was really important to give people something quick and practical to get going with, which is the daily T plan, the tiny empowering action. We can see people in the app doing that every day in the Habit Mechanic University app that people can get for free, so that you can start to build some positive change momentum. Chapter two, we really wanted to map out why we need to take a different approach if we want to be at our best. It's harder than ever before. We've only been able to look inside human brains for a very short window of time. And therefore, most of the things we've been trying to use to help us to be at our best were not designed with the brain in mind. We didn't know the rules of the game, if you like. And if you don't know the rules of the game, you can't win the game. Now we know the rules of the game, and we know that the only way to be at our best is to become a habit mechanic. And in chapter two, we map out the book and this manual for life toolkit for success that took me over 20 years to write, and all the tools that are within the book from a personal perspective, so you can become a habit mechanic. So the tools around building better sleep, diet and exercise, stress management, confidence, performing under pressure, focus, productivity, so you can get better work-life balance, but also the chief habit mechanic toolkit so that you can build high-performing teams, you can become a better role model, action communicator, cultural architect, swap coach, build high performing cultures. Chapter 3 introduces the language, and in that, in the episode of the podcast, we dug into some specific bits of the language, but also some of the specific tools as well, and unpack those. We feel it's really important to have a shared language, because brains and our behaviour are the most complex thing in the non-universe. So it's going to be easier to get the most out of ourselves, manage ourselves in a helpful way, and help others to manage themselves in a helpful way if we have a shared language. Chapter 4 is where we're trying to give a real practical demonstration of the downside of black box theories, and how Roger Bannister was able to capitalise on using cutting-edge insights from science, and use that to take his own personal performance to another level and beat the competition whilst doing so. And then Chapter 5 was the first step into really understanding how learning happens and why it's so important and why it's our secret superpower. And hopefully we dispelled some myths around learning in that in-depth chapter. And also, I think the 10 intelligence factors are really helpful for people understanding how to break down how learning actually happens. Yeah, so that's a quick summary of the first 5 chapters, and we've done a podcast on each one so people can look back and listen to those.
Yeah, thanks, John. That's really helpful, and certainly do have a look back at recent podcasts on whichever platform you get your podcasts from, and they'll all be there listed for you. The details of each chapter, just if you wanted to reference those, you will be able to see those in the podcast notes. But very well worth listening back to. So thanks very much for that, John. As I say, we're going to talk in this episode about this idea, this concept of learning, and look at it in a very different way and perhaps an alarming way for some people. But before we start to do that, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit more about some news you've had in terms of the one-to-one leadership coaching you offer.
Yeah, so we've launched the new one-to-one leadership coaching package, which is really exciting. I've worked with thousands of leaders, but I've decided to bring all of our training up to date, if you like, to include all the cutting edge new tools that we've developed. And actually last week we created a free training video on this, which is in the one-to-one leadership page, one-to-one leadership coaching page on our website. And the title of that training video is Learn How to Improve Your People's and Team's Happiness and Performance by over 25% in 90 days using a new science-based 5-step framework. So you can watch that video on our website, and I really unpack the challenges of leadership in the modern world. It's harder than ever to be a leader, but being a great leader is also more important than ever before. And I show 2 models I've developed over the last 17 years or so. One is called the 5-stage team power model, and the other is called the 4-step team power leadership model. And I explore my metaphor of leadership, which is about moving up a mountain, you and your team moving up a mountain together on snowmobiles. The top of the mountain is your team's mission, and so on and so forth. So you can watch that video for free on the website. The one-to-one leadership coaching, then, we call it the one-to-one chief habit mechanic coaching program. It includes 10 hours of one-to-one coaching with me. We do that over 6 90-minute sessions. People would normally do that over about a 3-month period. So it's not one session where you learn a few nice ideas. We work together over a sustainable period of time. And the ideas I share have time and time again shown that they can quickly improve a team's performance by over 25% and also leaders' performance. You're also going to learn how to use our proprietary chief habit mechanic metrics. These are assessment tools for your habits, but also your team's habits. So you'll learn how to use those. You'll also learn how to use our 30 plus award winning Chief Habit Mechanic habit building tools, so you can start to build new super habits for yourself and learn how to destroy your destructive habits. If you want to, you can also learn how to do that for your team. You're also going to learn, if you want to, how to use our proprietary culture development reflection tool. This shows leaders how to use our 9 action factor model to supercharge their culture so they can develop a purposeful development culture, which is more important than ever in the VUCA post-pandemic world if we want to help our people to be at their best and ourselves. As part of the one-to-one Chief Habit Mechanic coaching program, you're also going to get copies of the Habit Mechanic book for your people, your team, and also you'll get some access to the premium level of the Habit Mechanic University app for your people, so that if you want to, you can start to help them to build better habits. And then finally, you're going to join an exclusive group of certified Habit Mechanic leaders, because we've trained up certified Habit Mechanic leaders before, which is this is going to help you to stand out in the marketplace, which is overly crowded. And if you want to, we'll give you a certified Habit Mechanic leader certificate, so you can pin it on your wall and show off about how much you know about leadership compared to others. So yeah, we need to move past this idea of, if we tell leaders a list of things that they need to get good at, then that's going to be enough. We actually have to help leaders to build better habits. And that's what this one-to-one coaching program is designed to do. So if you're interested, go to the website and check out the free training video. And if you want to have a conversation about working together, let's do that.
Yeah, thanks for that overview, John. Really useful. And I know news of that program dropped into inboxes in recent days. And as you say, go to tougherminds.co.uk and look in the services and products section, and you'll see the page and the video John's referring to. Thanks. That's great. So, John, let's get into the meat of this podcast then. We're looking in detail at chapter 6 and 7 of the Habit Mechanic book. And the title of chapter 6 certainly caught my attention when I read it, and I know it'll catch many people's attention. You refer to this, what we've described as a secret superpower for people, i.e. learning, can also be incredibly damaging and problematic, and you've described it as fighting a learning war. Please do tell us more.
Yeah, well, we're learning all the time. The things that we're good at, we've had to learn to do. But also we've learned how to do the things that we're not very good at. For example, beating ourselves up, worrying, getting stressed, procrastinating, eating the wrong types of food, not sleeping as well as we'd like to, not exercising as much as we'd like to. And if we just think about the lockdown situation in the pandemic, that forced us to learn a new set of behaviours. Because we couldn't leave the house as much as we wanted to. We had to communicate via technologies. We had to do lots of different things that we hadn't habitualized before. So we are in a learning war. And the war, the people we're fighting against, is largely big corporates that are trying to get us to do what they want us to do. Because they monetize our attention, and they know that if they don't get us to keep paying attention or to keep consuming their products and services, then their shareholders are not going to be very happy. Unfortunately, a lot of the things that they want us to do to increase the share prices of their organizations are just not very helpful for us. You know, one of the examples that I give in the chapter is this is a verbatim article, a news story. I think it was in Vanity Fair magazine. It's one of the heads of the big streaming services saying that their competition is sleep, and they're winning. They're beating sleep, essentially. So they're making people stay up later than is helpful for them. We know the negative impact poor sleep has on brain function and therefore mental health and therefore things like weight gain and things like stress and things like beating yourself up and things like procrastination. And you had the boss of a huge corporate global entity ragging about that. You know, it's there in black and white. So we're in a war. We are. And we're being hijacked all the time to do some really unhelpful things. I just actually saw, I know you want to come in a second, Andrew, but just reminding me, I saw on the front page story of a front page of a broadsheet newspaper this morning as one of the little pop-out stories. It must have been a journalist from that newspaper saying, I turned my phone off and it's revolutionized my life, you know. It's like, yeah, you know, we've been talking about this stuff for nearly 10 years now. But it's great to see people starting to wake up, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to talk about the smartphone's role in all this very shortly, John, and how it plays its role in this potentially damaging and self-evidently damaging learning war. But just interestingly, I'd just like to pause in a way and talk about what you said about the streaming services. And yeah, we don't need to mention a particular one, I'm sure, but we all know them and we all use them. What's happening then in scientific terms, in brain terms, when these streaming services will show you an episode of something you like, something you've selected, and then immediately on their screen, their interface, if you like, that they're starting to show the next one before the current one's finished. In neurobiological terms, that's quite significant, isn't it, I believe?
Yeah, so in real simple terms, our brain's number one operating rule is to save energy. So we're designed to survive. And the core currency for survival is energy. If we don't have any energy, we can't operate. It's like if your car doesn't have any petrol or any battery charge now, it can't go anywhere. So our brain all the time is looking to save energy. So, you know, previously, I think The Sopranos is really interesting in those early HBO series because they captivated people's attention and they got lots of traction. But I like The Sopranos, and partly because I lived in that neck of the woods for a while, and it's just really interesting to me. But I didn't have HBO, so when I first saw The Sopranos, it was on DVD. So I would have literally, to change the next episode, maybe a DVD, I don't know, in a Sopranos box set might have had three episodes on it. So every third show, I'd have to get up and physically change the DVD. Now, as you're saying, it just rolls on. So it takes out the need for me to expend any energy to get a reward, basically. If I want to go to bed, I have to get up, turn things off, go up, clean my teeth, blah, 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 blah. Or I can just sit there and let the episode roll on. So it's really about energy conservation. And there are lots of brain science tricks that are being used to make it easier for us to keep watching and to keep engaging and to not get on with the meaningful stuff that we need to do in our life to actually make us feel good about ourselves. I can't remember the start in the chapter, but I think there's been a huge increase. Remember, because I have mechanic books, it's not even a year old yet, so all the stats are still very relevant or very recent. And I think there was a huge jump, wasn't it, in the last few years in terms of the consumption of videos online and TV streaming. It was a seismic jump, I think. I think it's up to about 6 hours per day. The last time I looked, for the average adult, it's consuming 6 hours a day of online video, which is massive. So, yeah, that's the brain trick. It's how do we make it as easy as possible to make you feel good?
Yeah, and what I'd like to ask you about next, John, is that's fascinating to identify that process, and I'm sure many people will start now immediately to recognize what's happening to them, what they experience when they use these services, and that happens as you described it. But to compound matters, to make things worse, we learn to be adept at this constant consumption, then that's this idea of learning unhelpful things.
Yeah, so learning is the central pillar for being healthier, happier, and at our best more often, but also for being unhealthier, unhappier, and at our best less often. Learning can be used to move us in both directions. And that's the whole point of the learning war, is we're battling to move towards the healthier, happier, at our best end of the continuum. But silently in the background, we're being conditioned and hoodwinked into practicing things that make us learn new habits that make it easier for us to be unhealthier and unhappier and at our best less often. So that's the challenge. And remember, if you go into the last episode, chapter 5, where we really break down learning, it goes from knowledge to skill to habit. So learning is the currency of how we build new habits. When we talk about this idea of, you know, we start with, at some point in the not too distant past, nobody had any neurons in their brain for the streaming service that they now consume, because it didn't exist. And then you start to be aware of it, and you move that awareness from outside of your head inside your head, and you start to grow some neurons for that streaming service. And then you start to use it, and you start to work out how to use it properly, how to see your favorite shows, how to navigate it, how to press the play button. And then eventually, just when you sit down on your couch or wherever you consume this stuff, before you know it, you're not even doing it very consciously, you're starting to turn that on and go to your favorite show. And it's becoming more and more of a habitual, mindless process, to the point where we don't even consider now not watching the next episode. It's playing before we even considered, should we watch it or not? It's already there in front of us. So the more we're practicing engaging in anything that we do, the more we're learning to get better at it. And then that learning turns into a habit, because we have enough neurons in our brain to habitualize the process, so it can just happen almost with no effort.
Yeah, it is fascinating and alarming in equal measure, John, when you describe it like that. And we mentioned it just briefly before, the smartphone also plays a massive role in this. We were just talking about it in the context of streaming services. But in the book, you cite another book by Dr. James Williams, who's, I believe, a former Google employee, who's written his analysis of this situation in terms of the smartphone. And he uses the term the attention economy. And you also make this point and identify this moment in time, as it were, where the smartphone has become an attention grabber. It plays a role in this learning war.
Yeah, so many companies that have, again, didn't exist in the not too distant past, but now have become some of the biggest on the planet, they generate their revenue through advertising. So social media platforms you use, for example, the search engines that you use, they generate most of their income through advertising. So they can't sell their ads or their spaces for ads on their platforms if no one's on the platforms. So although the platforms might appear free, they're not, because you're paying with your attention. And companies are paying these social media companies and search companies, for example, to place ads so that they've got a better chance of hooking you in to buy their services. So that's what we mean by the attention economy. Yeah, and it's said that the most valuable real estate on the planet is actually human eyeballs, because our attention is a scarce resource and it can be monetized. And if you think about it, it's the first access point into your brain. So becoming visually aware of something, you know, for most people on the planet, the first interaction they have with anything is they become visually aware of it. Even if you hear about something on the radio or a podcast, you're going to go check it out with your eyes. You know, again, if you have sight, but you know, most people on the planet do. So the attention economy is real. It's here. The consequences are very damaging, because our ape brain and our hue has a preference for paying attention to things that are not always that helpful for being healthy, happy, and at our best more often. We get hooked into these variable reward systems, and we're being tricked all the time to get addicted. And when I say addiction, I mean that you're doing something that you know isn't helpful for you. You know it's not helpful for your health, your happiness, your performance, but you keep doing it anyway. That means you're addicted to it. There's loads of tricks being used all the time to addict you to paying attention to and practicing engaging in things that are not helpful. So we see the red dots, for example, on your phone, on the app button icon on the phone, but you even now see it in the web browser, the little red dot on the social media apps, because we're conditioned to associate the color red with danger and importance. That's why that's there. You will see on your phone the little dot 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 that's signaling someone's going to reply to you. So there are all these little tricks that are designed with the brain in mind to hook you in and to make you practice engaging more and more and paying attention more and more to these things.
Yeah, and I think what's, again, just to, I think, justify the term war, because the consequences of this are potentially so damaging. The learning war, as you title chapter 6 in the Habit Mechanic book, John. We're practicing these things. We're learning to do these things, as you say, because of the way they're presented to us, and then they become habits and become. We do them on autopilot, and it's so hard to shake these things. And people will be familiar with being in a rut, but it is everywhere. In the book, you talk about how not just in the digital environment we might be hijacked, as it were, but the physical environment too. It's an example you cite in terms of supermarkets as well.
Yeah, so the products with the best margins that are most seductive to our brains, to our ape brain, our desire for high calorific food, are being deliberately placed in places in supermarkets that make us more susceptible to buying them. So you'll see the sweet treats, etc., placed towards the tills where your willpower is depleted because you've done a big shop or whatever, or yeah, you're just more likely to buy them. And you end up buying them. You know, the government was going to ban in the UK these sort of buy one, get one free offers, and they've decided not to do that, which is a crying shame, because it's just going to make it easier for more people to consume more food that isn't helpful for them. But, yeah, you know, we've got a mental health crisis. That's a habit problem. I just saw on the news this weekend about an ADHD crisis in the NHS. That's a habit problem. And if it's a habit problem, it means it's a learning problem. It means that people are learning to develop poorer mental health. It means people are learning to develop poorer concentration. And that's not, people are not waking up in the morning going, right, today I'm going to make it my priority to make my mental health worse. Today I'm going to make it my priority to deplete my working memory capacity and to develop an attentional style that's less helpful for me being able to focus and be at my best. When we're seeing I think we've got 2.5 million people in the UK that are signed off sick. They're physically incapacitated or they're psychologically incapacitated. Or they're not don't feel psychologically well enough to go to work. They're habit problems, and therefore there's a big learning element within that. So this is here, it's in the background, it's just we're not thinking of it like that. You know, another thing that we're seeing, the stakes have been raised for all the time, is organisations' abilities to make change. We call it change management. It's more important than ever to do, but it's harder than ever to do. And I don't hear people talking about change management within the context of learning and habits, yet they are the central components of change management. Until we understand that, we're not going to be able to build, or we're not going to be able to make sustainable change happen. So we can, for example, successfully incorporate these new technologies like human-like artificial intelligence into our organizations. So it's everywhere we look in society, from your favorite football team. If you're a Premier League football fan, the chances are that your manager's been sacked so far this season, because I think 13 of them have. That's because they've not been able to help the players to learn what they need them to learn and habitualize that learning so that they can adopt the style of play that they wanted their team to adopt. That's probably the reason why they've lost their jobs. And no one taught them how to do that. So this is so central to everything that we're doing, but it's invisible. And actually, we're silently being conditioned to learn things that are making our lives more difficult. And it's not being done accidentally. It's being done very deliberately, because people want to monetize our attention.
What sort of reactions do you get, John, from people? Obviously, you've trained many thousands of people. You've worked with major businesses. As you say, and as you point out in the book, people will recognize these situations, but they won't understand the detail of what's going on, as you've described it. How do people react when you point out what is we've called it a learning war, potentially grave situation?
Yeah, I think it's on a continuum, you know. I've come across plenty of VUCA world deniers before in the past, certainly before the pandemic, where they said the VUCA world is a load of nonsense. This idea that rapid change is going to happen is nonsense. Well, it's not, is it? Clearly, because you know, the rate is accelerating. I think it's scary for people. But the people that want to win, they see this as a competitive advantage, so they want to get a hold of it. They want to, you know, they see people, organisations see, are starting to see that their staff don't need more sales training. They don't need more traditional coaching. They need to build a culture that helps their people to create sustainable, long-lasting habits. Individuals, and, you know, we're training a really exciting group of people now to become certified habit mechanic coaches who are working across a spectrum of sectors. They're recognizing that, you know, the nice coaching conversations don't cut it anymore. We need to actually help people to build sustainable, new, long lasting habits. So, yeah, I think it's challenging for people. But it's understandably so, because most of what we're doing most of the time is mindless. We don't really think consciously. So it's not all that obvious to us about the important role that learning and habits have, and how we're being deliberately conditioned to do some really unhelpful stuff. But yeah, that would be my quick reflection on that, Andrew.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, John. And it's a good time to say that, because I suppose it nicely brings us to the end of this analysis and deep dive into chapter 6. And it is a grave situation, but there is some good news, because as you've identified, we can learn to do things which damage us and are unhelpful for us, but we can learn to do better. But it's important to recognize that the ways we've been shown to do that in the past have not always been fit for purpose. That's the central point of chapter 7.
If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.
Yeah, so we can learn to do better. We can take more control. That's the entire point of the Habit Mechanic approach. And I must admit, I forget the title of Chapter 7. Just call something like breaking through.
Well, I think most significantly, John, it's how to win the learning war. Chapter 6, we identified a learning war. Chapter 7, we're talking about how to win it. And I think that does provide hope and great optimism.
How to win the learning war and break through barriers in your own life. Yeah, and it's the shortest chapter in the book. It's 2 pages, but it's... For me, the message was distinct enough to have its own chapter. And there is hope. We can do better. When we learn how to do more intelligent self-watching and more intelligent planning using the Habit Mechanic Toolkit that's in the book, we're able to actually see some of these unhelpful things that we're learning, that we're being silently conditioned to do. And we're actually able to proactively work against that to start establishing new, more powerful habits. So in simple terms, we're able to notice our destructive habits, destroy them, and build new super habits that make it easier for us to be healthier, happier, at our best more often. But we're not only able to do that for ourselves, we're also able to do that at a cultural level to build what we call purposeful development cultures. This is what I go into in step 4 of the book in the Chief Habit Mechanic section. Cultures where it makes it easier for people every day to work on themselves and to learn to do just a little bit better, and then a little bit better, and then a little bit better, and to build the foundational habits that make it easier for us to be healthier, happier, and at our best more often. But also to make the kind of personal progress that's essential if we want to feel good about ourselves. And I suppose that's the beauty of the Habit Mechanic approach. Even though the book's only, it's less than 12 months old, everything in it has been tried and tested on thousands of people. In the last 10 months now, I think we talk about 10,000 people we've worked with. I think we're going up to over 20,000 people now, because we've got so much traction from the book in the last 12 months. And time again, on a daily basis, people tell me how impactful these ideas are on their lives. I think we're at a really exciting point where we know what the rules of the game are now, and we can start to use the rules to help us to win. And I can see already habit science making the same seismic impact on people's well-being, performance, leadership, team performance, cultures that, for example, sports science has had on the physical conditioning of professional athletes over the last 20 years or so. So habit science is sort of the shining light, I think, if we want to be healthier, happier, and at our best more often. And I'm not seeing it described in that language anywhere else but the habit mechanic. So, you know, the habit mechanic approach, I just think is, it's not just me saying this, it's the feedback we get every day from people. If we understand the rules of the game, we can win the game.
Yeah, I think it's really, really beneficial and appropriate that you've shared with us some of that progress that's been reported back to you when people have used your habit mechanic approach. That's not only great to hear, but it provides hope, because as you do recognize in chapter 7, sometimes when you embark on this journey to change, it does feel massively daunting and almost impossible. But you talk about people feeling and taking more control of their lives and feeling in more control.
Yeah, and I think that's the heart of what we're all trying to do. That is the ultimate outcome we're trying to achieve. We're not that conscious of it, but we want to get more control over how we feel. We want to feel better. And that's why it's easy for big corporates to trick us into doing things that give us short-term gratification, but actually make us feel much worse about ourselves in the long term. We want to get more control over what other people think about us. And that's why it's easier for these social media platforms present their lives in a disingenuous way, you know, to say, well, this is me and my life, and actually it's an edited photo and there's all sorts of stuff going on social media, so that makes you feel worse about your life. So we know that if we want to feel happy about ourselves, and if we actually want to get more control, it's not just about even into short-term gratification. We've got to build sustainable new long-lasting habits that also allow us to make personal progress. That means to do meaningful work that allows us to feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, and as we come to the conclusion of chapter 7, you talk about how you're going to take people on this journey of learning how to be better. Just, I think, a point worth making is, in the same way that you've shown us that in the attention economy, streaming services, big corporates, social media, smartphones, help us, in inverted commas, build these unhelpful habits, because what they present is brain friendly. People should be reassured that the habit mechanic book contains a myriad of brain-friendly tools and approaches to help them be better as well.
Yeah, so the key to doing better is more intelligent self-watching and more planning, intelligent planning. And that's what the habit mechanic tools allow you to do. Allow you to do more intelligent self-watching and more intelligent planning, so that you can do, or you can learn to think and behave in a different way that eventually results in better habits. That's the key. So more intelligent self-watching, more intelligent planning allow us to practice things, in other words, to learn. And if we keep practicing those things, we eventually habitualize them so that we automate them. So we're automating more and more super habits, and they displace our destructive habits.
Yeah, sorry, John, I perhaps wasn't clear enough. What I wanted to really get at with you is that you've very deliberately presented this. All the insights in the Habit Mechanic book are presented in this way that's just as digestible and just as brain-friendly, as you put it, so people can embrace these approaches in their lives in the same way that these other potentially damaging phenomena affect them.
Yeah, so we're certainly using the same, and I'd say more comprehensive, behavioural science systems than these damaging forces in the world are using in the tools that we've designed. And that's why we've very deliberately designed a book and an app that work together, which is unique, so that we can harness the power of technology. But also, you've got the manual here. It's in front of you. It's written down. But we can use some of the reward and penalty type systems, social support systems, make knowledge and skills a bit more accessible and brain friendly in the technology format. And, you know, week by week, we're now going to start to be adding more and more supercharged features into the app that really make it as easy as possible for our brain to develop, you know, more complex habits that are really helpful for our health and our happiness and our performance. And also, not just to do that individually, but we can do it collectively as well. So yeah, that's why it's taken over 20 years to put together, because it's quite complicated to do that. But chapter one, 2-minute daily exercise, that will save you, yeah, a lot more than 2 minutes every day. I guarantee it, at least half an hour, if not a lot more. So yeah, that's, we signal our intent and the simplicity of our tools from the word go in chapter one.
Yeah, well, thanks very much, John, for that overview of all the chapters, which we just had a brief look at the start of the podcast, but taking us through chapter 6 and 7 of The Habit Mechanic in detail for this podcast. Going to come on to talk about something that we've brought up in the discussion on this episode, specifically change management and some of the ways you're seeing that playing out in the modern world of business and in our societies. We'll get to that in a moment, but we've also just been talking, of course, about how people can access your insights and the Habit Mechanic insights and the training. You can, of course, download the Habit Mechanic University app from the App Store, as we can see on screen there. But recently, you've launched the new Habit Mechanic keynote, your talk, 90-minute talk. And I understand there's been some interesting developments on that recently.
Yeah, so we've actually been booked with some of the biggest agencies, speaker agencies in the world, just last week, alongside some of the most famous and high-performing people on the planet. So that's really exciting that our work is being held in that high regard.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. And if people want any more information about the Habit Mechanic keynote, then they can find it, of course, on the website tougherminds.co.uk. There is a video there which shows some of the insights you share and also some of the previous speaking that they've done, as well as feedback from a number of global businesses who've already experienced them. And I think it's worth just pointing out briefly that the keynote does equip people with the science-based practical skills we've been talking about in this podcast and subsequent and previous podcasts, so that they can feel better, do better and be at the best. They won't be overwhelmed with loads of unhelpful and practical information. It certainly won't be boring. Having been in your keynotes, I know they're highly engaging. Now, of course, people do have the opportunity as well to get a copy of the Habit Mechanic book. They will feel they have a great pathway to begin using your proprietary habit metrics tools that you've talked about on the podcast and identify destructive habits and super habits, so they can start to feel better and do better. You share 30 plus Habit Mechanic tools in the keynote. And as you say, it's fantastic that you've had this approach from a number of speaker bureaus and speaker representation agencies who have a very high profile client base themselves. And people can, of course, if they want to, approach you directly to book a keynote via the website, John.
Yeah, if you want to book a keynote, just get in touch and we can have a conversation.
Yeah, tougherminds.co.uk is the place to go. Thanks for that, John, and we'll look forward to hearing more about that in due course, I'm sure. I wanted to talk now about something we've touched on in our discussions around chapter 6 and 7 and something you talk about very often as well in your training and on podcasts and in interviews you give, and that's change management and the way learning, as we've been discussing it, has a massive and pivotal connection to that. Please expand on that if you would.
Yeah, and actually we've used in the past that we might use this expression in the book, I can't remember. But we've used the term personal change management. But the only constant in the modern VUCA post-pandemic world is change. And therefore, our organisations have to keep tweaking and refining the way that they do things, sometimes more than tweaking and refining, sometimes making big changes to the way they do things in order to beat the competition. So they need to make changes so that they can keep optimizing their approaches to delighting their customers. And the big news story on that front in the last few weeks, and it will continue to be a big news story, is the role of human-like artificial intelligence, which we took a deeper dive into in the last podcast.
Yeah, the chat GPT chatbot, and I think Google's got a rival as well that's been recently released, and there's been a great deal of news coverage of these things, and there was a report which analysed the potential seismic impact, a word you use a lot, seismic, on the workplace around the world, and it's so important that people are equipped to not only just deal with these new phenomena, these new trends and the way it will change the way they work and live, but they also can help others, and as you say, build a culture that can adapt and succeed in these contexts.
Yeah, so what the to successfully incorporate in human-like artificial intelligence into the organization, we need to help people to learn how to do even more of the kind of work that artificial intelligence can't do, or to learn to be more efficient and effective in doing the type of work that the artificial intelligence can't. So the way that we think about this, and we talk about this in chapter 25 of the book, is that we can separate the jobs that we do at work into two broad categories. One is freezing ice cubes. That's busy, mindless, habitual work that artificial intelligence is increasingly getting good at doing. And the other type of work we can do is building ice sculptures. So that's focused, clever, what we might sometimes call creative, innovative, high-impact work that artificial intelligence can't do so well. So actually what we need is to work out how do we optimize how the artificial intelligence can help us to freeze our ice cubes more quickly and free up our people resources, our humans, to do more of the ice sculpture building work. But in order to do that, people need to learn how to build more habits that allow them to do more ice sculpture building work more consistently. And that starts with learning how to build better, for example, sleep habits and diet habits and exercise habits so that you can get your brain working well. Building better habits around how you focus and how you manage what we call your activation levels and how you manage your stress as well. So what organizations can do is, if they understand that they're the new rules of the game, is they can create cultures, what we call them purposeful development cultures, that make it much easier for people to develop these ice sculpture building habits so that they can be more efficient and effective so that people can be more efficient and effective with how they use their time to do high impact work So that's the way that I'm seeing things shaping up. But at the heart of all that is learning. So when we, you know, change management, we've traditionally thought about bringing a new IT system or something like that. But we need to get much better at using habit science within how we make change in organizations. And excitingly, that's the work that we're doing with our clients. We're helping their people to ultimately build more ICE sculptures. And then very quickly, we know that by doing that, we can help to improve the performance of any team by over 25% very quickly, which you probably think, that's ridiculous, John. We can't do that. I guarantee you can when you implement this science. It's so powerful.
Yeah, and the metaphor you use of creating an ice sculpture, i.e. complex, challenging work, I think is incredibly useful. What's equally, I think, useful, John, and if you could just talk to us about this, it'd be great, in terms of people approaching a change challenge, if you like, and overcoming it and successfully navigating it, is just to drill down into a microcosm of it. There's far more to it, of course, but this idea of the brain being in only capable of this complex, challenging work for a short period each day.
Yeah, so we have a model called the brain states model. We talk about brain optimization as one of our 9 action factors in chapter 18, which is the our systematic proprietary behavioral science model that threads throughout our dynamic mechanic approach. So the brain states model talks about the brain being like a battery, and it has 3 operating states. One is recharge, one is medium charge, one is high charge. And we're going to use all 3 of those brain states in a 24-hour period, but there's an optimal way in which we can use them. And it's a bit like a pyramid. Recharge sits at the bottom. Then we've got medium charge. And then we've got high charge right at the top. So the high charge brain is our most scarce cognitive resource. And for me personally, but I see this, people reporting this in, you know, as well, is that you can only do about 4 to 5 hours of high charge work each day. And you're probably going to have a day off in every 7 of not doing any high charge work, you know, to recover. So for me, the rules of the game are really all about, they all center on how can I consistently every work day do 4 to 5 hours of high charge, clever, high impact work. And it's interesting, just as an example case study, the story that I heard of a company that has, they have someone that writes blogs for them, and they've started to use this, I think they've used the chat GPT tool to supercharge or to work alongside this blogger, if you like. Previously, without that tool, the blogger could write 1 blog per day, because that's all they were capable of doing in a normal working day. Now they're actually able to write 3 blogs per day using this new technology. So actually they're using, the way I would describe it, is they're using the chatbot to do more of the ice cube freezing work, which makes it easier for the human to do the ice sculpture building work, because that's all they have to prioritize. So in this case, the chat GPT block will literally write the first draft of a blog, and then the human goes in and does the clever ice sculpting work. But they can do 3 of those a day. So already, and I'm talking about 25% improvement across a team, that one individual is already improving their performance, their output by 200%. That's one person. That's seismic.
Yeah, certainly is, and when you realise how this insight into brain states alone can be so helpful for that. In other words, you would suggest that they perhaps set the chatbot going to create the blogs as part of this their more habitual work, and then prioritise the refining of the blog into the ice sculpture period, the high charge the high charge period, just to give it just to give a specific example of how that might fit into a working day for someone tasked with a specific role.
Yeah, and there was another story, wasn't there, about a young lady from York, I think, in the north of England. A beautiful place if you haven't visited it. Who got a rebate on a £60 parking fine by submitting a letter that she got ChatGPT to write for her. So the robot wrote a letter that meant the judge or whoever makes that decision relinquished the £60 fine. And that the report you referred to earlier said that just in Europe alone, this human-like artificial intelligence is going to significantly impact, in Europe alone, 300 million jobs. And that one example of a £60 parking fine, that's you would normally ask a solicitor to write that for you, that's going to be one of the biggest sectors impacted, because we don't need humans to do the ice cube freezing job work anymore, or, you know, regurgitate a contract for us with a few refinements. We can get the artificial intelligence to do a lot of that work for us, and we can leave the humans to actually do the more clever, complex work that AI currently can't do. So this is going to be huge.
Yeah, and I know you've worked successfully already with businesses on change management. Just briefly, obviously, people can access your programs. What is the starting point then when you are trying to take businesses on that journey of successfully approaching change management?
We need to understand what their mission is, first of all, and what their strategy is, and we sometimes help them to create a more... Well, we always help them to create a more what we call habit-focused strategy, so that habits are at the heart of the strategic approach. Then, you know, what are the priorities? How does that distill down into people's roles and responsibilities? But then we've got to help the individuals to learn the new knowledge and the skills around how their brain works and around how to build better habits. But essentially, so if you look at chapter 35 of the book, which is our culture development tool, we're helping the business to get all the 9 action factors working for them. The factors that actually drive learning and behavior, so that their people have got a better chance of building the habits that allow them to be at their best. But it's always, you know, the core outcome, they will use this brain power to do different things. But the core outcome of those change management programs is always the same. It's about how can we help our people to build more ice sculptures every day. Now, sometimes those ice sculptures might be directed towards selling more product, you know, and doing all the things that you need to do in order to do that. Sometimes the ice sculptures might be directed on creating new products. Sometimes it might be on, you know, doing better marketing. But whatever it is, it's about how can we actually help our people to move away from doing busy, mindless, habitual work that we can now automate more of that, and how do we help them to actually get their brains working really well so that they can do more ice sculpture building work. And that is ultimately underpinned by a set of habits.
Yeah, and the metaphor which you use of ice sculpture and ice cubes is incredibly useful, and people can really get to grips with it and understand its true application in the Habit Mechanic book, and it is so useful and so fascinating. Well, John, thanks so much for today, taking us through that. Chapter 6 and 7, of course, were the core of the podcast of the Habit Mechanic book, and a fascinating look at change management as we're seeing it play out in our modern society, and I'm sure we'll keep further tabs on the progress or otherwise of these new tech trends, including ChatGPT. Great also that you've had that good news on the keynotes. Remember, people can find out more about the Habit Mechanic keynote, which you offer on the website tougherminds.co.uk, and the new leadership one-to-one coaching that you're offering, which recently launched and dropped into inboxes in recent days. But again, tougherminds.co.uk, there's a great video you can watch about that on the website too, so I would certainly encourage people to go there. Great to talk once again, John. Thanks for another fascinating podcast. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Yeah, I actually want to remind people, so there's such a rich set of insights we've now got in the podcasts that we've been creating in conjunction with the book. And there's actually a podcast, which I think is from the second week of January 2023, where I share chapter 17 of the book that allows you to access the habit metric tools. So if you want to learn more about your own habits and start to identify some of the ones that are destructive for you, but also some habits that are and could be your super habits, just listen to that podcast, take the assessments. Also in the Habit Mechanic University app, you can listen to the entire audiobook for free. If you like what you hear, if you like what you're reading, please like, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review on the platform you bought the book from. We're actually just going to launch our 250 review campaign as we move towards the 1 year anniversary of the book. We're looking to get up to 250 reviews. We're nearly there. So if you like what you've read, tell other people about it and help other people to be at their best. Because the more people we can get using these approaches, the healthier, happier, and at their best, more and more people are going to be, which is only a good thing. And remember, I know building new habits is not straightforward. It's complex. It's a journey. But time and time again, I've said this and I've seen it, you're only ever one habit away.
Thanks for listening. Remember, if you want to get your business off to a great start in January, get in touch to discuss how our Habit Mechanic keynotes or workshops can equip your people with practical skills that help them build super habits in 5 minutes. Or if you want to earn $100,000 a year working part-time by launching your own coaching business, we guarantee to help you do that in just 13 hours. Get in touch with us today to learn more about becoming a certified Habit Mechanic coach who can transform people's lives and is recognized as a world leader in the field. For more details, contact us via the website. The link is in the podcast notes. Or if you want to feel better and do better every day, download the Habit Mechanic University app from your app store. Thanks again for listening.